Welcome to the McCovey Croncast. It is Tuesday, May 10th, 2016. I'm Brian Murphy, and with me is...
Doug Brazzoni.
Doug Brazzoni, welcome back to another week of Giants baseball. You know, I was starting to think that when we don't have a podcast, they do well, but we delayed this week's a little bit, and they still lost, so now I think it's out the window. Because we didn't do it that one week, and then they were... We didn't record their first week, obviously, and they did well. And then they didn't record that one week, and they did well. And yeah, so now there is no superstition in my mind. The Giants went 4-4, and we had nothing to do with it.
Well, I will say that Jake Peavy did have his second-best start of the year, so maybe... Maybe that was on us. Maybe we're the ones that are keeping holding PV back.
That's possible. Now I'm going to think about that one. Damn it! But if you are a fan of Giants baseball, then you know that 4-4, they are 17-17, heading into another gulp game against the Blue Jays. That was my attempt to make a gulp sound because Blue Jays have a really good offense and the Giants are starting the first two games of the series with their worst pitchers. But anyway, let's go through the week, shall we? Real quickly, the Giants started off in Cincinnati, which traditionally, or at least I'd say over the last 5 or 6 years, has been sort of a tough place to play. But I would say since about, 2012, it's been fine. So
October of 2012.
Yeah, right. So 9-6 was the first win, and that was a start where Johnny Cueto looked great really early, and then he looked really bad for a while, and still pitched a lot of innings, but he gave up 6 runs, and he got hit really hard. It was not a sharp start, but luckily the Giants were facing the Reds, and the offense got going.
Yeah, he looked bad. He looked great early. He looked very bad for an inning, then he looked great again for a little while. So I guess sometimes he'll just have those innings and the Giants will win anyway. Right. That's my takeaway from Johnny Cueto. Sometimes he'll be really bad, but the team will rally behind him. So, you know, could be worse.
They like him. They want to do well for him. And so they step it up. Yeah, it was really the third inning is where he got lit up for 6 runs. And, Joey Votto... the Giants, I think, fixed Joey Votto because he had a really bad first month of the season. And I think after this series, he's back to Joey Votto. But he crushed a home run to deep center field. I'm pretty sure even in that park, hitting a home run, what am I saying? Jay Bruce, Joey Votto. Yeah, that hitting a home run to that part of the park is still a very impressive home run, even though the ball tends to jump out of there. But otherwise, Cueto had 8 strikeouts. 2 walks. I say threw more innings. He threw 5 innings total. Things get a little foggy for me, folks, immediately after the game. But and that was a game where we got the debut of Vin Mazzaro, I believe. Nope, I take that back. That was not his debut. But it was a game where he did well, which, as we will see, is the only game he did well in this past week. And it was sort of. Once they overcame that and were down 6-3, they had a 5-run 7th. That was the Reds bullpen has had a historically long run of their bullpen giving up an earned run in consecutive games. And I guess what? In my years of being a Giants fan, I kind of expected that streak to end when the Giants came to town, which would backfire and cause them to lose a game. But that did not happen here. So I have a lot of perspectives to change, Doug.
No, that one came close to happening, though. I think in the last game of the series, they had to scrape one out in the ninth inning.
That's right.
So they could lose 7-4 instead of 7-3. But that's a lot of pride that they've got there.
That's right. And that game, Brandon Crawford, he had a big home run in the seventh inning when they really started to get it going. He had 4 RBIs in that game, so that was a really big game for Crawford and Mac Williamson had been called up, so he got the start, and Mac Williamson did not look fantastic, which we'll get into some more. But it was a great game all around, except for that bad inning for Cueto, but I'm still happy with the Johnny Cueto signing, and yes, I don't want him to have 6-run burp innings. So hopefully that will be diminished as time goes by. But otherwise, it looks like when he gets into trouble, it doesn't look like he's remarkably different from when he's pitching well. That's just how it goes to me. Like maybe he just enters the wrong sequence in terms of whatever code he punches in to do his shimmy shakes. Maybe he just gets a little off rhythm, but he looks the same when he looks bad as he does when he looks good, at least to me.
Yeah, no, I think he is generally just a good pitcher who has a couple bloops fallen and then a couple hard hit balls off him. And that'll happen to everyone. It seems to happen to him where that all gets clustered a little more regularly than everyone else. But it's, he's been so good for the Giants. It seems petty to complain about that.
I'm not complaining. Yeah. So, and they won. So the rule around here is if the Giants win, everything's great. So, and then we go into the next game where Samardzija pitches, and Samardzija pitched a great game. The Giants win game two of that series in Cincinnati, 3-1. And it was, 3-1 in Cincinnati. You kind of think, oh, things aren't going quite that well. And the Giants did have to score 2 runs in the eighth inning, again off the Reds bullpen, to make that happen. But limiting them to 1 run, Jeff Samardzija, he pitched 8 innings, 9 strikeouts, only gave up 3 hits and walked 2. One of the hits he gave up was a home run to, of all people, Adam Duvall. Former Giant Adam Duvall. And he crushed it, so that was good for him. But Samardzija looked fantastic. And against, I would say the Reds have probably a decent offense all the way around. So this isn't him just dominating a bad lineup. But we've seen him dominate, be dominant against the Rockies in Colorado. And so there's been some really impressive flashes from Jeff Samardzija that we've already seen, and this is another one of those.
Yeah, that signing's been working out really well so far. I mean, I think we were all very against that, you and me and Grant and basically anybody, and Jeff Samardzija is like, nope, I'm very good,
Well,
which is a good response.
yeah, I mean, it's the best case scenario. You sort of hope that the Giants, in that Jason Schmidt kind of way, they're like, we like what you do here. Do more of what you're good at, what we like about you. Also, it helps that he throws 94 to 96. That's always nice when you have that. Covers a lot of mistakes. And Santiago Casilla had another save. I mean, we talked about him last time. And, this was a week overall that he looked like the Santiago Casilla historically been with the Giants, where he's just the guy, and there's no question, no doubt about it. And that was that also, so like I said, you're just calm. That's all I meant to say. So yeah. Hail Santiago Casilla, yeah.
Yes, hail Santiago Casilla. Sorry for everything, Santiago. You're better than what we've given you.
And then because baseball hates us, the Giants don't get the sweep. They lose 7-4 in the final game of the series in Cincy. And that's because Jake Peavy started. I mean, there's really no other reason why they lost that game. Jake Peavy still did throw 101 pitches. He did pitch 6 innings. They were not good innings. He had 8 strikeouts, so I guess you could hang your hat on that. But he did allow 4 home runs and gave up 7 earned runs. I think he was just bad.
Yeah, I mean, even for a start in Cincinnati, that's bad.
Yeah,
So
he was just bad.
he was just bad. Jake Peavy is not good.
The Giants couldn't really put up a crooked number. Dan Straley was. I mean, God, would the Giants kill for Dan Straley on the team right now? I recall, his pitches looked sort of crisp. He knew how to keep the ball out of the middle of the plate, and the Giants only have, 40% of the rotation can't do that. And they also couldn't really put together any big innings, so it was just a bunch of 1 run here and there. And then also, it's early in the game and you're down 5-1 after 2 innings and 6-1 after 3 innings. It's kind of like, what's the point? It's getaway day. You're just miserable at that point. So not a great end of the series there, but, the Giants get a series win, which I think early in the season is always the best thing. I mean, that's ultimately what you want to do, right? If you just get series wins the whole way through, you're going to the playoffs. You're going to be one of the best teams in the sport. But early going, win series, you're fine.
I think, I know the Reds are bad, but if you go on the road and win a series, it's tough to complain about that ever. Like, even if the Giants go into Atlanta at some point and only win two out of three this year, that's still probably fine.
It was an annoying loss because PV's been so bad, and I would say for whatever reason it made me think of the Brewers series to open up because they had a chance to sweep, but that third game they just couldn't quite punch it through. And I'm reminded of it as like the Brewers are kind of equally as bad as the Reds, maybe. And that game I remember being sort of like, oh well, they just couldn't get they scored. Runs and Samardzija pitched okay. They just couldn't quite punch it through. That was different from Peavy, where he just put them so far behind. It was just, what's the point? I think Posey got pulled in that game, and just they were just like, nope, we're not even going to try. This is stupid. And another game that was stupid. Yeah. Should we just go right into the worst?
Do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
So then the Giants come home. Hey, they're back home, and that was on Thursday, and the Giants were eviscerated, decapitated, disemboweled, just I don't know what else. They were fisted, they were donkey punched, they were everything. 17-7, the Broncos just ran all over the 49ers. It wasn't even close. The Rockies just came into town, and I think they beat Matt Cain so badly that and they beat the Giants and Vin Mazzaro so badly that dental records are the only way that they know who to bring in from the bullpen going forward. But a 13-run fifth inning, the Rockies scored in the top of the fifth, and that was the most runs allowed in AT&T Park in a single inning in AT&T Park history, the most since 1997. By the Giants at home, and that was against the Expos. And I think and it caused the Giants to designate for assignment Vin Mazzaro, and I keep mentioning his name, and it's worth mentioning. Look at the stats, don't turn away. In one third of an inning, he gave up 6 hits, 9 runs, 7 of which were earned, and he walked a batter. And left the game with a 63 ERA, which I like that. That's just funny to me. Matt Cain somehow threw 4 innings. I mean, he started the fifth, but I mean, he gave up 10 hits again, 6 earned, 8 runs total, and 2 home runs. He didn't strike out anybody, and he didn't walk anybody. And I think that, I mean, it's kind of hard to... I think it's distressing in a lot of ways. Yes, you'll just have bad games or you get blown out. That's fine. I get it. But we're 5 weeks into the season, and I feel like the Giants have had 3 really bad games that you could argue that are going to be there at the end of the season for worst games of the year. And you've kind of had some games that are the worst in either Giants history, AT&T Park history, or respective pitchers' histories already in the first 5 weeks. You've had like 3 or 4 of those.
Yeah, so the fifth inning was obviously the disaster inning here. I will say that in addition to the pitching being bad, the defense was also bad in that inning. Crawford booted a ball that Arenado hit that should have been an out. You know, if you can get an out on Arenado and you don't, then you deserve to have 12 runs scored against you in an inning.
Right.
And then Joe Panic had trouble with a double play ball, which was like Vin Mazzaro's first hitter. And if you have trouble with a double play ball against the Rockies, you deserve that 13th run against you too.
Well, that was Kelby Tomlinson. There's that.
Oh, it was
guy.
Kelby. That's right. Panic was hurt. Yeah, sorry. I should have known. Guy boots a double play ball. It's Kelby Tomlinson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. and it's tough. We've already talked about Tomlinson. It's tough to focus in on one guy, but man, you know, you get those opportunities. I think it's best to be more like Gregor Blanco, where people kind of forget that you played that day if you don't
right.
do anything. So, I mean, I think maybe people expect that I'm going to just be angry about it, but it's sort of, this was the game that afterwards Bruce Bochy finally sat there and said, "Oh, maybe we need to think about our rotation." But I don't know what else to say beyond that. It was embarrassing. I've said all the other things about what it was. It was embarrassing, humiliating, hilarious. It's also baseball, one game out of 162. And so you'd like to think that you can just wipe it off and move on. And the Giants did exactly that. They won their next two games. I don't think we need to focus more on this game. Vin Mazzaro was designated for assignment afterward, and I think that pretty much settles it.
And then we never talked about Vin Mazzaro again.
That's right. I will say that heading into the series, you were confident that the Rockies were not going to be a problem. So feel it's important to point that out.
They split the series. Is that really a problem?
Well, and it was tough to split the series too. It was really tough. Somehow the Saturday game, so they win 6-4 when Madison Bumgarner does not have a really a good start, but the offense is somehow able to come through, which is nice. But a 4-run second inning, he still struck out 10, but you know, I would say it still wasn't that great of a start overall. He pitched into the eighth. As I keep bringing up all these facts, you're like, well, it was a good start, but you give up 4 runs, it gets, especially early going, you know, you're the stopper or the ace. It's difficult to put your team back. But it was sort of a Cueto start in that Bumgarner had a bad inning, and then that was it. And especially it was early enough. You know, it's a little bit different from a Peavy blow up where you're like, okay, Bumgarner had a bad inning. I trust that Bumgarner is not going to have a bad inning going forward. And maybe that's what allowed the team to be confident and score all those runs. They're also facing the Rockies pitching. You got to be confident you can score at least 4 runs off the Rockies pitching, home or away. It doesn't matter.
I will say about Bumgarner's start, again, like the day before, there was some problem. There were a few problems with the defense. This time it was Joe Panik who made the error. That's what I was remembering. In the second inning, and that was kind of a dink and dunk sort of very Padres rally. So I mean, it wasn't, you know, you don't praise a guy for giving up 4 runs, but at the same time you go, well, that's not that big of a deal, like in terms of projecting him going forward.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I wasn't trying to t say anything about is Bumgarner done or something. The 10 strikeouts against a really good team, and the one walk, to me, that's fantastic. 108 pitches. I was very happy with it all around. And again, Santiago Casilla comes in and does a great job. It's the next game where it's sort of like, man, these Rockies are kind of a pain in the ass too. You got it from that game a little bit with, like you said, the dinks and dunks, but a pitching duel that went 13 innings and required, you know, Matt Duffy getting the walk off, but John Gray, a top Rockies prospect at one point, I think, struck out 5 in 7 innings, gave up one hit, walked two, and Johnny Cueto didn't quite match him. He matched him in terms of not giving up any runs. But 8 hits in 8 1/3 innings, and he struck out 3 and walked 1. So it's strange. Like when Cueto has a sort of a bad inning, he sort of makes up for it by striking out a bunch of guys. And if he's keeping another team down, he's not striking out guys. I don't know. Strikeouts are usually indicative of a pitcher being on his game. But Johnny Cueto very much pitched a Leivan Hernandez game in this one.
In a good way,
In the
just to be
best way.
clear,
No.
the
The
best
platonic
way.
ideal of a Leivan Hernandez start. Giants era Leivan Hernandez, because young Leivan Hernandez, he could strike guys out. I guess the takeaway here is that the Giants bullpen was able to pitch so many innings without, Corey Guerin gives up the run, but they didn't like have a meltdown. Hunter Strickland threw almost 2 innings, and he did not give up any runs. And so good for him.
Good job, Hunter.
Yeah.
Was the podcast that didn't record, was that the one where we emphasized that Hunter Strickland vanity searches on Twitter? Because I
That
just want
is
to
the...
emphasize again, Hunter Strickland vanity searches on Twitter.
He does. He vanity searches on Twitter, and he's got us all blocked. And he's, I think this podcast is now blocked. He, yeah, that was the same one. And You're gonna have these games too. It's kind of weird. You're gonna have blowout games, and you're going to have these surprisingly tight games. It was a game where Joe Panik went 0 for 6. Not great, but he was coming back. Like you said, he's been dealing with the groin thing. Hunter Pence 0 for 4. Buster Posey 0 for 5, which I think we need to talk about. Gregor Blanco 0 for 5. Gregor Blanco's been playing because Angel Pagan has been injured, but not so injured that he's not on the disabled list. So the Giants were sort of without their main guys, or without a main guy, and the other main guys are some version of being ineffective or coming off of injury. So it was a weird timing. And then, as the broadcasters have said, John Gray and a couple of the other guys the Giants have faced this week, the Giants haven't faced them before. And so, to me, if you're going to face the Giants in the playoff series, it seems like you should not put on your playoff roster any pitcher the Giants have faced before, and you're going to sweep the series and win 7-0 every game. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, that seems reasonable to me.
Because it seems striking to me that just by virtue of not facing a guy, that to me that sort of implies that the Giants are really computer algorithms, and if they don't have the data, they can't generate the result. That seems to be a little surprising because ultimately baseball comes down to, half a fraction of a second reactions. And I don't know. So it's a weird thing to say, like, well, if you string that many unfamiliar faces together, they're all making the same quality pitches every time. So I don't buy into that broadcaster thesis about why the offense is going badly. I guess we should finish up the run here. The Giants did not win the series. They split the series because in the final game of it, they got shut out 2-0 at home. Again, Eddie Butler, who they faced before, but I guess they haven't really seen him too often.
I mean, to be fair, do you remember Eddie Butler?
I don't. But
Yeah.
that was another great start by Jeff Samardzija. Giving up 2 runs and losing is not a dishonorable start there. He pitched into the eighth. He threw 123 pitches, which is the most he's pitched, I think, since 2013 or something like that, in a game. 9 strikeouts, and he looked great again. And the offense just couldn't do anything. Joe Panik 0 for 3. Matt Duffy 0 for 3. Buster Posey 0 for 4. Hunter Pence and Brandon Belt were the only people who had hits in that game, except for Blanco's other hit. So there was 3 people in the lineup getting hits in that game. You're not going to win a lot if that's the case.
No, that's going to be
So congrats to the Rockies for being a pain in the ass.
tough.
And then last night's game was Jake Peavy somehow surviving a start against the Blue Jays. He hung in there, and he pitched 5 innings somehow, threw 112 pitches, struck out 6, walked 5, gave up 5 hits. So his whip of it's been 2 like the whole season, so it's still there.
So his whip was what, 1.6 then? Five
No,
walks and
5
oh
walks
no,
and 5 hits
five
too.
hits.
That's
Yeah, two.
basically been his whip the whole year. And he lowered his ERA though from a solid 9 to an 8.47. So his whip on the season is 1.912. He does have 31 strikeouts in 34 innings. And I would say that if you watched the game last night, don't call me crazy. I'm correct. That was a generous strike zone on the outside corner for both teams. It was very consistent, but I think that certainly helped a lot because PV, when he's pitching quote unquote well, it's because he's able to get batters to chase way outside the strike zone, and usually that helps that he's getting the calls. And maybe he does just pitch better at AT&T Park overall.
He might. It's just that seems like the kind of, okay-ish start that bad pitchers have, where that's the upside, and so that's not really what you want out of someone in a major league rotation.
Well,
Because
I
I
mean,
mean,
that's
there's
a.
the other. I guess the other factor is that the Blue Jays have been in a really, really awful slump all season long. Like Tulowitzki's hitting under the Mendoza line, which. That's my analysis about that. And they really have been. They've been kind of getting by this year on pitching, which is not what you expect from them. It's not what you expect from them coming in the season. It's not what you expect from them going forward. They have a lot of talent. Jake Peavy came in and, you know, he got through with the start. He didn't – he was not the reason the Giants lost, but if he keeps pitching like that, it's tough to see him sticking in the rotation. He said as if he didn't predict Jake Peavy would already be out of the rotation.
It was a Mark Gardner number five starter start for me. So I think that's why he's going to stick around a little bit longer. We also got the debut of Albert Suarez, who is the guy who was called up to replace the Vin Mazzaro tire fire. And he pitched two innings and struck out two and walked one. And he looked good. He had a crisp fastball and he had a nice breaking ball. And he was not throwing the ball right down the middle of the plate. Which to me is encouraging.
It is. I mean, to me, the interesting thing about Suarez is he was Sacramento's best starter this year, and they called him up to be a reliever when there are two tire fires in the rotation. So yeah. I'm not sure what the plan is there.
Yeah, I mean, we've covered the week 3-1 loss yesterday. So the Giants again back to 500. Boring. They'll face, they'll be going with their top, or they'll be going with Matt Cain tonight. We'll see what happens, but it'll probably be another tire fire. There's no reason why it shouldn't, really. There's no reason to expect anything less than a blowout at this point.
Okay, quick
this
question, Brian.
Season. Yes.
How many runs does Matt Cain give up in the fifth inning today?
That's the key inning. Yeah. I'm going to say it's going to be... four runs, but it'll be the seventh total run.
Okay.
I think he'll give up three, and then I think he'll give up four.
I think it's going to be runs 3, 4, and 5.
Okay. All right. So
he'll only get one out.
But we're both sure that the Giants aren't scoring any runs tonight.
I mean, they might, but who cares?
Right. So this is what a 500 team does, folks. Who cares at this point? But there's one thing to care about, and maybe some help is on the way. Another Albert Suarez, his name being Tim Lincecum. That's the big news. Tim Lincecum had a tryout on Friday for 23 major league teams. It was at the Giants spring training facility. I think everyone knows all this stuff by now. It was on TV. I had a great article idea. And I did not expect that he would be so popular that it would kill the idea. But the idea was, well, there's not going to be video. There's never video at these tryouts. They don't record them. So I'm like, what if a courtroom sketch artist sketched out scenes from the tryout? This is what happened since we couldn't get video footage. And I was going to do like chalk or charcoal drawings and like colored pencils and give him the bad Tom Brady face and all that stuff. And that didn't happen because there was video and he looked good.
Yeah. I mean, he did. He, you know, his velocity was not, it was better than it was the last couple of years, but somebody said, well, it's the same as it was in 2012 and 2013. He was bad in 2012 and 2013.
Right. He's been bad a long time.
He's been bad for a lot of years now. Yeah. It's tough to see him helping the team. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if he can stay above 90, because he was dipping down to 89 and 91, and that's a straight fastball. There is no movement on that sucker. And it really just looks – it just really functions at this point to be faster than his other stuff, which if his curveball is back or looks good, which all the accounts said, then that's great. And if he has a slider, that's great. And if his fastball – works, then now his changeup is more effective. So it could work. I like him as the idea of a rubber-armed super reliever who, with this Giants team, would throw probably 8 innings a week. So,
right.
So he'd essentially be a starter. And the teams that would be interested in him right now, it looks like the front runners are the Angels, which is not surprising given their needs, the Diamondbacks, which is little surprising, the Padres, not surprising at all, the White Sox, which is pretty surprising, and the Giants, which is not surprising. Do you have any feel for this, Doug? Any sense of where he might go? What might happen?
I don't, but why should I let that stop me?
Yeah, that's right.
Never
Karma.
has before.
That's right.
I'm saying the Padres because he feels like he should be on the Padres. Like, it makes more sense for him to go to the Angels. The Angels are more desperate, but it just seems right for him to be on the Padres. Not in a morally right way, but just in that's how these things happen kind of way.
Yeah, that's what I predicted a long time ago when we heard he was going to try to make a comeback. I think they need him. I think the park will protect him a little bit. And if he goes to the American League, I think he'll get bombed. I think he'll be destroyed. Which is still weird to say because to me, I don't enjoy American League baseball, but they will beat the holy hell out of Tim Lincecum. So, yeah, I don't know. I would say come back to the Giants, Timmy. This is how desperate I am, Doug. The Giants pitching is so bad. I would rather take a flyer on Tim Lincecum starting for a little bit. Because I don't want to see Jake Peavy or Matt Cain anymore. They are not, they don't keep the team in the game whatsoever. Whatsoever. And I'm not willing to play the Russian roulette of will Matt Cain go through three perfect innings and then have a bad inning? Or will he just be bad right away? Because either of those are the options on the table. And even the Giants are finally starting to question it. But you have to wonder, what are they doing? They bring up their best starter from the minors, like you said, and now he's relieving. That kind of implies to me, Doug, that they will get a reliever and make him a starter, which is what would happen with Lincecum.
I mean, yeah, I guess I don't know what they're doing. They're like the sort of they're smarter than me. I don't want to say they're not. They know more than me, but I don't understand what they're doing.
Yeah, we on this Chroncast, folks, we acknowledge that the Giants are smarter than us. We appreciate that, I think. And we know that they know more than we do, but we also know that they are almost blindingly loyal. And we know Bruce Bochy in particular is, and we know that Jake Peavy is his boy, probably more than any other. I mean, I don't know. Where would you rank it on the all-time Bochy's guy list? Peavy, Klesko, Phil Nevin,
Vinny Castilla.
Vinny Castilla. Yep, that's right. Thank you. That's awesome. Well, he's number one.
He has to be number one.
And Tim Flannery. I mean, that seems to me to be the core of that's Bochy's gang right there. And his dog who passed away. If you read his book, Walk, I can't remember her name now. Wrote a whole review. But out of the humans, that's I mean, his son didn't even get the loyalty that Vinny Castilla got.
That's true.
So I don't know. Where would you rank him? PV's got to be one or two, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, like the thing is about Klesko and Nevin, I don't know that I can't think of anything specifically they didn't justify with their play. Like when Klesko was on the Giants, you know, he was good for a while and then he was bad and Bochy stuck with him. You know, the team was bad. Team wasn't going anywhere. Bochy stuck with him about an appropriate amount of time, maybe a few weeks longer than he had to, but that seemed like just sort of general any manager will like a veteran with who'd put up the numbers that Ryan Klesko had in his career. So I think Klesko and Nevin are at the bottom. And
Okay.
then there's and you know, Nevin, I can't remember anything at all that like specifically when he played when he shouldn't have for like 2 months.
Well, I also think Nevin got injured a lot, so it made the decisions a lot easier.
Yeah. And so then the other three were PV, Castilla, and who? Oh, and
Tim
who?
Flannery.
Oh, Flannery. I think Flannery is the most his boy out of anyone.
Okay.
Because Bochy had to fire him in San Diego, and he really didn't want to,
Right.
but he was kind of forced into it by the front office, which I think there was a little bit of a grudge there.
Yeah. Then they won three championships. I think it's a little bit over.
Well, no, I think the grudge was between Bochy and the front office,
Oh,
not
right.
Flannery and
Oh,
Bochy.
right.
Because
Well, it is.
when Bochy came to San Francisco, his first thing was, "I'm getting Flannery back."
Yeah. Oh, right. Well, having a grudge against the Padres front office, I mean, He's the only one
Just the
who's
only
ever,
one.
who cares enough about them to have one. Let's talk about one last thing. We'll get to your questions and everything. One thing I just want to mention real quick is that we had Willie Mays celebrated his 85th birthday back on Thursday. Hold on, am I getting that right? Yeah, Thursday. And he was honored, sorry, Friday, and he was honored with Happy Birthday by Metallica. I don't know. Was that the best way to honor him?
You know, maybe he loves Metallica. I don't know. I've never asked him.
Oh my God. What if Willie Mays liked Metallica? Do you have is there a Willie Mays fact or something that you find most memorable? I feel like we should talk about Willie Mays often. I feel like we on this Croncast don't do it quite enough, but I mean, he's, in some people's eyes, he's the best baseball player of all time. And these are people who you wouldn't, these are people on the East Coast who would think, you know, Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, but there's a strong national thought that he's the best ever. Vin Scully, he always talks about that Willie Mays is the best he ever saw.
Yeah, he is. He was obviously an all-time great. And the problem is the facts that spring to mind for him are generally the ones that everyone knows, you know, 24 All-Star games and that, and he hit the home run that 16 inning game. I will say the year he got called up to the majors in 1951, he was at the time hitting .477 in Double A. So he kind of forced the issue there a little bit. And that was over 149 at bats.
And as we know, Double A is more competitive than Triple A. So he was really hitting.
Oh wait, no, that was Triple A. The league was the American Association.
Okay, yeah. All right.
I was confused by that.
It's all right. And but also kind of famously, when he came up, he was 0 for his first 24, or 0 for something like that. And you know, sort of that whole thing of if he was on today's Giants, he would have been sent down. He would be Mac Williamson. which I'm not comparing Willie Mays to Mac Williamson, but I guess we'll never know, right? At the same time.
Never know.
We'll never know. To me, the Willie Mays thing that I always come back to, the one that thing I always remember, besides the catch, was the line, the All-Star game was made for Willie Mays. That to me is the best thing, and I believe it's Ted Williams who said that. So to me, that's sort of like, that's baseball. That's putting quite a bit of stock in him that even his peers could sit there and say, this guy is something, he's on another level. And we still get that from time to time, some certain players sort of being in awe of their contemporaries, but it's always fun to see. And sort of, there hasn't really been, maybe because baseball players are traditionally such jerks. And so there hasn't been one to transcend all that jerkery to sort of get a consensus or some sort of, or statements to that effect. You know, you hear guys talking about Mike Trout or Giancarlo Stanton or Miguel Cabrera even, in sort of in those glowing terms, the contemporaries. Because usually they're just like, oh, if I pitched against him, I'd hit him in the ribs. Because pitchers are whiny piss babies. And I don't know. So there's really not been anyone like him since. Sort of
no, there absolutely hasn't. Like the best current day analog is probably Kershaw, who, you know, everyone's like, well, yeah, he's tough. Like sort of that respectful acknowledgement that you could see how 30 years from now, somebody will be like, oh my God, when I had to face Kershaw, I literally wore adult diapers.
Who's your top suspect?
Aubrey Huff.
I want to get the Ted Williams quote correct. He said, they invented the All-Star game for Willie Mays. So that to me is really cool that Ted Williams would say something like that. He's just a cool guy, and I love that he's such a part of the Giants' current history. And whenever he's interviewed and whenever he talks, you know, to me it always just seems like if you only get – I only see people who are famous getting asked about the things they're famous for. And just from an outsider, I'm not always interested in that, and I always have false empathy, and I'm like, I would not want to be asked about the thing I'm famous for all the time. Like, if that was the only thing I, you know, anyone ever talks to me about, I would get annoyed after a while. But maybe it's one of those things of like comedy where a joke stops being funny, and then if you keep doing it, it gets funny again. So maybe he's honored, then he got annoyed for a while, and now he's honored again. I don't know.
Very possible, but the important thing is, happy birthday, Willie Mays.
Happy birthday, Willie Mays, and thanks for being great. Okay, so let's get to our Twitter questions, and then we will dazzle you with our answers there.
Okay, so the first one is from, well, we have two different Lincecum questions, which we kind of already answered, right? I don't know.
Yes. Yeah, we do have one. I meant to respond to that, so we can ignore those and go on to the ones that are new.
So then the wow. So we got a question from Al Bazan at PHX Giant. What are some of the best pre-All-Star break Giants trades, and will the Giants make one? I can't remember one ever.
I can't either, and I probably should have researched this, but I can't remember. I mean, I guess the easy answer is a spring training trade.
Right, so
And I still
Chris
can't.
Stewart, George Contos.
There we go. That was a great trade, right?
That was.
That worked out. So that's the leader in the clubhouse. Let's see. I can't. I mean, no one wants to listen and searching for these trades, but I guess I can edit it out.
Oh, that's right.
That's
Our
right.
listeners are stupid.
It just takes time to edit shit out. I'm looking Scudero, Ellis Burks, nope. Randy Wynn, nope. Angel Pagan, but I guess these are this off season. These are the spirit of the question is clearly like maybe spring training is okay, but certainly after baseball has commenced. So
Right. Yeah, it's not.
I can't think. I would say that the Stewart Contos one works. Contos is still, you know, on the team and is considered to be a more than useful cog in the bullpen. And they've already run through three or four Chris Stewart alternatives or people they think are going to be better. So, I mean, that's the one right there. The bigger question is, will the Giants make a trade before? Yeah, you know, this early in the season, which I think is actually a very interesting question. And I think the Giants, the way they work, is simply they read the tea leaves or try to analyze the market. And I think that they are not willing to play. I don't think there's a market that's developed that they'd be happy with right now. That's why I think the Tim Lincecum option is appealing. He would just cost money and probably not that much.
One of the things the Giants always talk about, either unprompted or from very light prompting from the beat writers, is trades before June, before July, before a few weeks before the deadline always cost way more than they want to pay. So they're not really interested in doing that.
Well, that I mean that's a good point that they'll pay more, but they pay more the later it goes. But I also think that at this point in the season, there's not a lot available, and so you would also have to pay a high price if you started making the trade proposals. So I think they'll probably just scour waiver wire type situations or anyone coming back from injury maybe, or yeah. Lincecum is an easy alternative, but I mean also I guess they're kind of thinking we can make it through May and hopefully someone will step up.
Right.
I don't know what their thinking is. I don't want to put strategy in their mind, but I would say for sanity's sake, they should probably just be focusing on, okay, we need to get one more good starting pitcher, right? Because if you just focus on we have two bad pitchers, I mean, yes, that is a smoking crater in the back of the rotation. But if you fill in half the hole, then it's just a trench. So you'll be you might feel like you can paper over, you know, if you pull Matt Cain after three, now you feel like you got a chance, right? All right, what's the next question?
The next question is from Paul Reiser Fan Club at Tweets by Jesse. The question is, how about a Where Are They Now segment about Grant's llama boss? So for those of you who aren't aware, Grant used to work at a job where his boss would occasionally log on to his computer and post things from his account. One time he posted a picture on McCovey Chronicles of llamas that's and then with paint written in paint, it said, "The llamas are always watching you." So Brian, where do you think he is right now?
I think he has been promoted up, and he's now a llama executive.
Oh.
And I think because he's been at the company for a long time, he's done a good job. I just think that he, for a while, probably thought that he could, use this as a temporary situation and then find a better job or career field. But then he stayed there so long. He's like, okay, I'm just going to advance up the ladder. So now he's a llama executive. And I think that he doesn't allow any outside sites to be accessed now. That's the corporate policy he's instituted to prevent such Grant Brisbys from developing right under his nose.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a good point. I will say that I think that he maybe did that for a while. I think he ascended. He not only is now in charge of llamas, but he's doing alpacas, he's doing camels, he's doing lots of other dromedaries. And then I think he dropped out and became the Republican front runner for president.
Okay, all right.
So with
That's
that, should we do our
a big
game?
swing. Yeah, let's do it. So our game here. Let's do some Civil War. As you know, Captain America: Civil War came out, and we like to chase the trends. And the tagline for that movie asks, "Whose side are you on?" So we're gonna pick a side between two things, not Captain America and Iron Man, but certain giants things. I have a few. I think Doug has a couple of options. So throw it out there. We'll pick a side, and we'll explain why we're picking that side. So the first one I'm gonna throw out, Doug, Peavy or Kane?
I mean, this is tough. I hope this isn't just sentiment talking, but it might be because I'm going with Kane. His,
Going Kane.
his stuff has looked better this year, and the results have not. The results have basically been horrific for both of them. But Kane has looked like he should be able to be a major league pitcher, and Peavy has not.
That's correct. The strikeouts are sort of the interesting thing with Peavy, though, that he can still strike people out. And I guess I'm more interested in knowing and understanding why that's true as opposed to how he's doing it, because I don't think they're connected. I think they're diff there's a different reason behind why guys are still being fooled by him. I don't know. I think they're just anxious to hit him.
Right, they're just, oh, I get to play against Jake Peavy, and they
Yeah,
take a
that's
swing,
right.
and like, oh
That's
man,
right. That's
oh
right.
fiddlesticks.
All right, what do you got for me?
So if you could only have one for a spot in the bullpen, Hunter Strickland or Corey Guerin?
Corey Guerin.
Ooh.
I'm gonna take his movement and his general command over Hunter Strickland's velocity has not. He's never, to me, seemed to have an explosive fastball where there's that next level, but it's such a straight fastball, and this year it doesn't. It looks like he's either, varying his speeds a little bit, but it just doesn't look as overpowering as it has. And I don't expect over 60 appearances or a whole season that it would in every start, but I haven't seen a lot from him this year that makes him other than the 12th man in the bullpen. Really, the Giants have like five 12 mans in the bullpen, to be fair, but he has not looked like the guy they expected him to be, prepped him to be, all those types of things. So to me, I would pick Guerin over Strickland. And no, and they're both, they both come from outside organizations, so it's not like this is some betrayal or anything. This is what happens. Bullpens turn over. So I'll take Guerin's relative consistency. That's all.
Okay.
That's a bit of a cop out answer. Consistency. Who doesn't pick consistency? let's see. All right. Whose side are you on? Angel Pagan or the disabled list?
Well, I feel that Angel Pagan and the disabled list should be on the same side. I think this whole conflict is very silly. It could have been avoided with better communication.
Well, do you think he's not communicating? Well, that's interesting. Do you think he's not communicating how he's feeling?
I think that there is a problem with the Giants sort of not telling him that he needs to be 100% to be an effective player, which means he needs the time off. And maybe that's something that he can't hear, that he has trouble with. But Angel Pagan at 85% should not be playing. Angel Pagan at 85% should be resting. And it feels like if he comes back tomorrow or the next day, that's what we're going to get. And I think that's what they should be talking about.
That's fair. Yeah, so you're on the disabled list side.
Yeah.
all right. What do you got for me?
Let's see. Okay. Well, as a backup outfielder, Mac Williamson or Jarrett Parker?
Great question. Whose side am I on? Oh man, I was starting to lead with my heart here, but I think I should lead with my head. I'm going to pick Jarrett Parker. My heart says it should be Mac Williamson because he's better. But I think he needs to play consistently. So that's not going to be the case. So we're talking about backup outfielders on the Major League roster. And I don't think Jarrett Parker is really very good. I was very surprised that when he came into pinch hit yesterday that the Blue Jays threw him a fastball, because to me that sounds like they didn't do a scouting report on him or it's a bad one. And he missed it, but he was looking for a fastball. And he pulled it. It was on the outside part of the plate. And to me that was like the perfect Jarrett Parker plate appearance. That was the perfect two teams never playing each other, one team with maybe questionable scouting, and a bad hitter kind of getting exactly what he's looking for and doing the only thing he knows how to do with it. But to me, that's good for a backup, because in a pinch hit situation, that's kind of all you really want is a pull hitter who's going to be able to do some damage on a bad fastball. It wasn't quite a bad fastball, but really that's the best you can ask for. And really, the Giants don't have a lot of options when it comes to power off the bench, and I can't deny that Jarrett Parker has some power. Defensively, he's, what, about Angel Pagan? Maybe a tick better?
I mean, yeah, defensively, he's fine. He can't play center field. I mean, yeah. He can, but not especially well.
Well, they've got Blanco for center field, so
yeah,
that kind of works out. So I would say Jarrett Parker.
Okay, I think that's fair as a backup outfielder.
All right, and the last one. This is a controversial one. I might go on a little tangent here if you jam me up too much. Buster Posey. Whose side are you on? Buster Posey or the catcher's aging curve?
Buster Posey, always and forever.
I am dismayed by Buster Posey's season. It's not quite going off the rails here. He's fine. But I think I mentioned this in a couple of Croncasts ago, where it sort of felt like he, in the middle of the order, it's not the best case scenario for him because he's not a 30 or 40 home run threat. And he's certainly not going to hit that this year. But I don't think the guys around him are bad, but I'm wondering if he shouldn't be a guy around somebody else at this point. This is the second straight year where he's gotten off to a good start, but he was coming off of sort of 3 years of amazing starts. And is it ridiculous to think of someone having consecutive amazing years together? Well, no, but Buster Posey's track is the Hall of Fame. I'm not, I don't feel like I'm being ridiculous in saying that. I don't think you disagree. And no. I would say that he's sort of, it's, early enough that he can turn it around and have a great year, but he can still be a Hall of Famer and not be the guy. You know what I mean? He can still be a very strong supporting guy, but he may not be the guy going forward to carry the offense. They're giving him a lot of off days. They're all built in the schedule. It's a demanding position, and he's just getting older. And I don't know about you, Doug, but I can't be in a crouch for more than 3 minutes. So I don't know how he's in the crouch for that much, no matter what flexibility. So I'm going to pick the aging curve in this case, and I'm going to say that Buster Posey is the best player on the Giants, but the edge that he had is sort of narrowing here.
I will not pick against Buster Posey.
I know. You're
not sure.
You're team Cap.
Yeah. I mean, I was team Cap when Kane was Cap, so not saying my judgment is good, but.
Well, I mean, in fairness to the Matt Cain stuff, Matt Cain is just now, I'm going to wipe out the last year and a half or whatever, because he had a legitimate injury that made it difficult to pitch. But basically, Matt Cain now is sort of what everyone was fearing he would be when he was pitching, when he was the best pitcher on the Giants by far for like 3 years. That's what we've talked about, is sort of like people expect things to go badly, but that's how it goes with every baseball player. Eventually it all goes badly. And so you can hold on to something for 5 years, and it's really an idiotic thing to be like, aha, I told you, 5 years later, after they've been awesome. So I'm not really saying that here with Buster Posey. I never thought, oh, Buster Posey's going to stop being an MVP, but it's sort of simply like, man, the Giants are really counting on him to carry the offense, and when he doesn't, it's noticeable, and I don't know. He's been really bad with runners in the scoring position this year, and he just seems like he's sort of like last year, where he's going to be great, but he's not going to be like he was in years past, and I think that's just him getting older. That's all.
Yeah. Well, okay.
What do you think of Civil War? Did you see it?
I have not seen it.
All right, so then we can't talk about it. And we won't spoil that on a baseball podcast for you.
So we won't tell you how Thor comes back murders Hawkeye.
The secret about those movies has been that Jeremy Renner is apparently kind of a jerk in real life. Or jerky, I should say. And the fact that they've leaned into that part of his real life persona and made that part of the Hawkeye character is what makes him so enjoyable now, I feel. Anyway, so there you have it, folks. The Giants are going to try. They've got the Blue Jays to handle still this week. And I think your 80-something win prediction is still on track, Doug, which...
I think so. I mean, they haven't hit 57 yet, so
they can only win.
Still chance.
Yeah, and according to my calculations, they only have 40 wins left in them. Which, if it was just Jake Peavy, Matt Cain, Chris Heston, Stratton, and who's the other Triple A starter I can think of?
Block.
Yeah, they would only get 40 more wins out of that starting five if that happened. So, just looking ahead real quick, two more against the Blue Jays, sadly. And then, oh my God, and then a four-game series against the Diamondbacks, which, not again. That one's in Arizona. And so we'll be talking about those games next week, which makes me very nervous because I can see them going 0-6 since they haven't yet beat the Diamondbacks. What was your game of the week, Doug?
I think the extra inning game, the 2-1 walk-off.
All right. I'm going to say the second game in Cincinnati that Samardzija start was really great.
Yeah.
I'm going to call that one. And then I think the 17-7 game is just too easy to pick as the worst game of the week.
You know, I'm okay with doing it anyway. I don't mind.
It was really bad.
It deserves it.
You can pick that one. I'm going to pick the Cincinnati 7-4 loss because I mean, if you read Grant's recap of that 2-0 Rockies loss, though, he makes excellent points about why that was such a terrible game, because that was a game where the Giants at least had opportunities to score those two runs. maybe even three runs, and they couldn't do it. So it was sort of frustrating in a whole new way. But that Peavy start in Cincinnati was demoralizing. More than the Kane one, insofar as like this is a team they could beat, and Peavy just got hammered, and I don't know. So to me, I'm going to pick that one. It just seems so easy to pick 17-7. But that one at least had some defensive miscues, and it had Vin Mazzaro following up Matt Cain. You could kind of see where that game was going in its own way. But Jake Peavy doesn't help the team at all. It doesn't even keep him in the game. So
right.
That's depressing all the way around. Who do you have for player of the week?
I'm going to give an honorable mention to Belt, who walked 7 billion times, because that's what he does now.
Yep.
But I'm Samardzija, who had two great starts.
Those are great picks. I'm just to get some extra love in here, since this is a Giants podcast, I'm going to throw in Derek Law, who I love dearly. And he got a win, which makes me very happy. His first major league win, in fact. And I love him. Maybe irrationally. too soon to love him. And he's a pitcher, and he'll break our hearts. But those are great picks on your end. So, and Brandon Belt's having a hell of a season. So keep going, Brandon Belt. Doug, do you have any parting words?
I hope the Giants are good.
Yes, I co-sign that. And thanks for listening. We will be back on Monday.